Conferences. Long agendas, big venues, always on your feet, barely getting to see the people that you want to see, and then, of course, the expense. Well, the three of us at Good Morning Hospitality are launching Good Morning Retreats. Our first retreat is this July 8th through the 10th at the Horst Hospitality Training School in Auburn, Alabama. If you go to goodmorningretreats.com, you'll find out more information about our first retreat that we're launching. We have already filled half the slots. We have 20 available and we have about 13 already filled. So make sure you go there, you apply, show your interest, and we'll get you all situated for our first ever Good Morning Retreat. Thanks so much for tuning into the podcast. And now back to the episode. Smart locks, smart thermostats, automation, and a solution for any hotel and vacation rental company. Our show partners at Operto are the leading solution for operators to enhance their operations by integrating with your property management software and making sure that all your smart devices create a contactless guest experience while streamlining your operations. So don't forget to check them out on their website, send me a message, or just let them know that we'll send you and you are in good hands. So get ready to enjoy another episode of Slick Talk the Hospitality Podcast and check out operto.com or go to the podcast website and see our partners page. Good morning, gentlemen.
The Monday. Two out of three of us have been to the beach this weekend. Sorry, Ross.
Sucks to suck. You know, I was a beautiful resort.
You can tell how tan I am, right?
Yeah, you've changed a lot, Michael. Yeah. You've gotten so dark.
It happens fast.
No, I noticed one thing with the sun is that my hair turns a little bit more blonde. You can't tell now because it's not the most brightest room, but when I'm outside, it's like blondish red, which is a little scary. Okay. I haven't seen that side of me since I was a kid.
All right.
Anyways, how are you guys doing? Good week?
Come on. You talk about the beach and here's -3, -4. It's freezing. It's cold. So please. Oh, man.
I didn't say it wasn't cold at the beach, but yeah. It was.
Okay.
And there was mine wasn't. I got sunburned. I was laying out by a cabana, you know, getting drinks fed to me. Can't complain. Mine was a lot better than probably.
Well,
I'm gonna brag about it. It was much needed. But other than that, good week, guys. Good for you. Everything good.
Looking forward to this one again.
Yeah, it's an exciting episode. We do have some live viewers already right now, so really good stuff. I guess we'll break it into what's with the noise because we love a good news session. So here we go.
Happy Monday. Not quite as happy of a Monday as it is for the team at Transparent. Congrats to Pierre and company for being acquired last week. I think it was OTA Insight. Yep. So congrats to those guys. It's been well-earned. You guys have been staples of the industry, providing good quality data for us all. So kudos. Go enjoy a nice break. And then I'm sure getting back into it, staying in the business. Not sure what the deal is with you, Pierre, but keep it up. Hope to see you soon.
Yeah, it's every week a Surgeon KR, the nice acquisitions, nice startups actually raising some money. In this one, we have a kind of different one. It's more like a fintech company, but focusing on the hotel industry. Selfbook, they raised $50 million for a $300 million valuation. So pretty well done. They did a round already a bit earlier. I think it was in January. They did a round already. Now they do another one. So pretty impressive. And I think what they do, and this also discussion we have often internally within bedrooms, are removing friction as much as you can. And I think what they do is including more payment methods like Apple Pay, Google Pay, etc., make it easier for people to check out. And I think eventually it will increase your conversion. So guys, well done with your nice round. And one more thing I want to share as well is that our iMeet Hotel brand, the brand which we organize, the event brand of Bedroom, we have in 3 days, we have a really cool sustainability summit. It will be virtually. So join, register yourself. It will be at 3 p.m. CAT. So join our session and move back to you, Will.
All right. Well,
got bread on me.
I did. I was going to say, so this is something we kind of talked about behind the scenes, but not my worst nightmare, but just as a podcaster, names are always tough. So having two Michaels and now soon to be two Wills, we're going to join our amazing guest, Will Perry, who is one of the co-founders of Altido. And recently, in some news a couple weeks ago, was partially acquired / merger. It's a whole thing. So we're going to bring Will into the show to talk about it. Michael Golden, you want to announce also maybe a fun fact about our guest?
Yeah, Will Perry, aside from being a well-known CEO of one of the larger operators in Europe, is a two-time winner of Wipeout, a very select group of winners on Wipeout in general, but to do it twice is quite a feat of athleticism. So brains, athleticism, looks. Will, what do you not have?
That's a very kind introduction, Will and Michael. It's funny because I very much enjoyed my time on Wipeout, which was about over 10 years ago. And in terms of sort of celebrity status, it seemed to go down best with about sort of 10-year-old boys who may ask for an autograph. But I'm amazed it's sort of 12 years later, you seem to still be one of my biggest fans. So I'm very grateful to you for sharing and spreading the news, and also for the very kind introduction about the business as a whole. Delighted to be joining you guys and to tell your listeners and viewers a bit more about what's been going on at Altido, which is never a dull moment.
Of course.
But still a question, because I'm in the meanwhile checking actually, if they call the Tough or Nonto. I see different kind of nicknames. Is it that's your or?
Well, but, yeah. It's hard to get that one. Hard to get past that one. So they give you nicknames in the British version of the show, and they called me Non-Toff Will, which I think was a joke about maybe sounding a bit posh in UK circles. So Non-Toff Will is my stage name.
Well, we won't call you that here, and especially because you were a guest on Slick Talk a little bit like last year-ish. Yeah, and I didn't really know that whole detail, so I'm glad I didn't, because I probably would have been smiling like this the whole time. But no, it's really cool to have you on just to see kind of what happened. And I even think I met you through Michael Golden when we were on a host all together. I think that was us. We had Andreas from Sextant Stays as well. And it was just interesting to see the big different, mindsets or, even pivots in the beginning of COVID from Sextant and Altido and what you guys were talking about in the sense of growth and sustainability. And yeah, very, very cool to see the story come full circle. So I guess if you want to give us some insight on what kind of led to this acquisition or the merger and,
can you start a step earlier, Will? Because I think a lot of people understand Altido is just originally was a group of four or five operators that came together. Whose idea was that and how did that actually come about?
Yeah, sure. It was four companies and in four different regions. So the company I founded was in London. And then to form Altido, we merged with three other companies, independent companies, with really similar profiles. So I think you guys will probably know, and anyone working in the short-term rental industry will know that when Airbnb was booming in, I mean, still obviously is booming, but when it was going through one of its biggest growth phases in sort of 2014, 2015, there was this whole ecosystem of property managers like us popping up around it, supporting owners who wanted to short-term let their properties. And there were kind of two routes you could go down, the sort of independent, bootstrapped, quite sort of blood, sweat and tears of the founders to make sure the business was profitable and scale a bit slower. And then there was chasing the VC money and external fundraising to really expand beyond your geographies very quickly. And we went the former route, with my co-founder at the time, Tom Archer, who's still very much with the business. And we met these other businesses at the industry conferences. And so that was a chap called Michael Allen up in Scotland, and Davide Ravalli in Italy, and Gonzalo Ribeiro in Portugal. So these were the four businesses. I think the first people to meet were actually Mike and Davide. If you ever get Mike on the show, he'll explain how he got locked. He managed to get locked out of his property at a short-term rental conference. And so basically didn't go to sleep and bumped into Davide in a coffee shop, I think, the next day looking a bit bedraggled. So quite strange, humble beginnings. There was a lot of talk and a lot of networking. And I think if you were in our camp as business owners, you have a bit of a problem because you're growing a nice business that you hope it feels like it might be a lifestyle business, but the reality of the day to day is it isn't really, because it's taking up all your time. You want to scale, but you're caught in between, betwixt and between, because you might not have the cash flow to do it. And you build your business on your network and on your region. So, you know, we were strong in London because that's what we knew, and the same with our now colleagues. But it's quite hard to just go into another market where there's already incumbents at play. And so there is this sort of existential question. Well, we're all young entrepreneurs wanting to scale, but how do you do it? And we'd kind of seen the fundraising route, but it didn't look that, you know, look like that was fraught with problems as well. I think we've kind of been vindicated a bit with what's happened since. And so we wanted to try something different. And the talk of doing a merger as a, you know, in theory overnight, suddenly you've got an international presence, you've got a bit more clout behind you, you've got a seat at the table. And that was true. You know, people like Airbnb and other big brands would notice us a lot more and suddenly want to talk to us. And you're also diversified, so you're de-risked. You're not just stuck in one geography where there might be a regulatory issue or the market might be in trouble. So that was the theory behind it. And we did that in May 2019. The reality, obviously, of merging four businesses is it's not straightforward. And, you know, we had all sorts of challenges. But we knew, we went in with our eyes open. We knew that was going to happen. And we had a good year in 2019. What we didn't know was obviously what no one knew was what was going to happen next. And so, you know, that was when I took over the leadership role of the business in March 2020, and then it was very much of just a case of stabilizing things and keeping things steady as we navigated uncertainty. So that was, I guess, step one. We got through that period, and actually in 2021 was when we were beginning to look, even though COVID was still very much around, we were beginning to look outside and think, okay, well, you know, we've got to look beyond COVID and where we're going to go. And one of the reasons why we did this merger is, again, we thought, well, post-merger with a larger international platform would be a more attractive investment proposition and we might have a better foundation to leap off. So with COVID hopefully moving behind us, we thought, well, now could be the time. So we wrote our new business plan and our financial model and began to speak to investors in quite an informal way in spring last year. And it was through one of those conversations via my Italian partner, Davide Ravalli, who knew the brand and the founders of Dover Vivo, that we started speaking to them. Now, if you're unaware of them as a brand, they are quite a lot older than us as a business, 14, 15 years. They're a co-living, sort of young professional student living accommodation provider. They take long-term leases and let them to young professionals and students, typically 6 months plus is the kind of stage that they have in their regions. They're big in Italy and increasingly large in France and Spain. So we started speaking to them, and we realized we're in the process of raising some money. They recently raised 50 million euros from Starwood Capital, the American real estate fund. And we started to talk to them and we realized there was quite a lot of synergies here. And what started as an investment, as a minority stake, turned into a full acquisition of the business. But I guess why it's confusing with acquisition and merger I think it's important to say that the five founders of Altido are very much still with the business, still shareholders in the overall group, and are very excited about the next step in this journey. And we think doing
not,
it with
those not people. Retired yet.
Not retired yet, no.
I think it was also the longest answer we ever had in the show.
Sorry, yeah, that was good. Really long. Yeah,
that was good. I think it was directly good intro. No.
Someone had to take the microphone away from you, Ross, this episode, balance it out.
Will, something you mentioned four or five times throughout that was brand. And you went from small local to now regional to now, one of a recognizable brand in Italy. And I'm sure with y'all's help more across Europe, how big of a difference does teaming up with a brand make? Do you see more trust? Do you see more bookings? Do you see more viability or trust on the property asset ownership side?
Yeah. So, I guess at this stage, considering we're, 6 weeks in, really, we're still in hypothesis stage. I mean, we're beginning to do some of these synergies that I mentioned and that you just mentioned, but I think it'll be really interesting in a year's time if we met up again and discuss, how did it actually affect the business and the numbers. So I'll give you one example. One is that they as a business, Dove Vivo as a business, are focusing on a very clear segment of the market, students and young professionals, and they provide housing very specifically for that. And they've built up a very successful brand in that space, particularly in Italy, and get, I believe it's about 1 million hits a month on their website looking for this kind of accommodation. We as Altido, obviously, much larger. We manage all sorts of properties across all our regions, and our guests vary massively, from 18-year-olds to pensioners to people looking for business trips or a holiday. And so there's definitely a really interesting play. And I think that the most concise way of putting it was someone from Dove Vivo said, when we build this now, this residential platform together, which is quite unique in the market, ultimately what we're going to be saying to the market is you can be coming for a day, a month or a year, but you can book it via us. And so that means if you're the student coming to stay, you've got to know Dove Vivo as a brand, you've trusted them, you've stayed with them for 2-3 years, and now you want to do your city breaks or your holidays, or as you grow up more, maybe you've got some business trips, you can stick with the platform within that platform, and you'll be well looked after. So I think there's some
interesting,
some really interesting synergies there.
I like the play from a student to business travel. It's one of Airbnb's tactics with hosts is if you can get these single hosts, they're going to book through you too. So it's kind of a two-sided marketplace, essentially offline, that goes through people's heads. Rewinding a step before the merger, when you guys all merged under Altido, did you ever see a bump in trust or direct bookings compared to what you were getting at London Residences?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, I guess the skewing factor is COVID came not that long after, and obviously then data skewed entirely. I mean, we saw a significant bump in our direct booking percentages, but I think a lot of businesses in our industry did. That's something we've maintained since then, and actually we're now investing in it in a much more direct way than we ever did before. And when I say invest, that means hiring people within our teams to specifically go after direct bookings and specifically developing partnerships there. We started spending money on trying to acquire direct bookings online, which is something we'd never done before. And I think in terms of the early days, say May 2019 to the end of that year, the bump was, there probably was a bump in terms of getting our brand out there and becoming more and more well known with guests, but that's a long term play that takes time. I think the initial bump is what I was saying about presence within the industry, on the kind of inside the industry itself, and in terms of inventory acquisition and having the right relationships with some of the big partners. You just got taken a lot more seriously. So we were able to do some mini joint ventures with Airbnb, who introduced us to some very large asset owners and helped guarantee some of the rent there, which we would never have been able to do if we were just a smaller local player. So I think the way we saw that merger was actually the growth came on the inventory side and the sort of status side of being in the room, having the right conversations, and the long-term play now more so than ever with Dover Vivo is clearly on this B2C guest-facing consumer brand. I know we spoke before, Michael, about, you know, is Altido as a brand changing? For the time being, no, and no plans to. It's purely for the short let arm, and we're, as I say, continuing to invest in that. I think over the long term, Dover Vivo is an Italian brand, Italian name. We're creating an international business that we want to go public with at the end of next year. We'll need an international name for the larger group. And so highly likely that there'll be some rebranding there. And depending on what direction that goes, that may affect us as well in the future.
Okay. Yeah, super exciting. I'm curious because, of course, you started the company some years ago. And well, we just saw the segment Startup of the Week. Well, you started as a startup. Of course, you went through some learnings. If somebody's listening to the episode and they're actually startup founders, so some advice you give to them, because of course you went through different journeys in fundraising, now the acquisition part, something you would like to share with them or advise them?
Yes. I mean, how long have you got? I would love that. And I do that quite regularly. I mean, it's nice to be reminded, as you say, that we are entrepreneurs and that we do, you know, we did found startups, and obviously that changes as we go along, and it's so vital that we hold on to that creative spark because we can lose that. If I was to give one specific piece of advice, I think it's something that I was told at the time, but when you're depending on your outlook in life, when you're a startup founder and you kind of ultimately got nothing other than you might have started you registered the company with Companies House in the UK, but it doesn't have much to it. It doesn't have revenue, and so you hold it quite lightly. And I think looking back on that journey to where we are now, it's realizing that actually, you know, that's everything. Like the potential there is huge, and don't underestimate how far you can go. If you had told me 7 years ago that I would be running a business that is likely to go public in 2 years, I'd say that's never going to happen. What are you talking about? How would that end up there? And actually, I think for young startup founders, it's just instilling that confidence. I think for your American audience, you're probably very good at doing that anyway. This is probably more a British thing, whereas we underplay things, whereas the Americans perhaps maybe overplay it. And, you know, they know they're going to create a unicorn from the beginning. But if I'm giving myself advice, it would be, you know, it is to back yourself.
If you weren't doing this, Will Perry, what would you be doing?
I don't know whether I should answer that question honestly or not, because it might undermine my credibility.
Didn't you tell me that you had something with like bees and honey? You had like a bee farm?
Juice.
There we go. Okay.
It's really important for making juice. Maybe that's why you, and it is a cottage industry. So yeah, after the wipeout days and before the London Residence Club days, myself and Tom used to make apple juice. I wouldn't be going back to that. I hasten to that. But my dream, I'll tell you, my dream is to, or one of my dreams is to do something with children and possibly a toy shop. I have this vision for a toy shop, but I wonder whether we'll ever get that passion off the ground. And that's
nice.
For another day.
Probably in 1-2 years you can do it, right? After the IPO, you're starting the very very after shopping that lock-in somewhere period. Next to the toy shop. Is it there's the Hamlet, or what is it called in London?
Hamleys.
Yeah. So
yes. Yes. Yeah. I'll be a big rival of Hamleys one day.
Look out, Hamleys. It's coming for you. Heard it here first. Yeah. So one of the things we've talked about a good bit on this show, and I'm sure you've tuned into most of the episodes, but you may have missed this one. We talk about mergers and acquisitions and how this year we anticipated quite a bit of mergers and acquisitions as opposed to straight funding rounds. You guys, transparent, just in the past 2 weeks, having gone through it, is there a lot of appetite for companies out there to acquire other companies? Or what are your predictions, and where do you think the most ripe market for M&A is?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably worth saying that, I mean, we're obviously a believer in mergers in that that's in our DNA. We did a four-way merger, which was pretty extraordinary, I think, in any industry, really. But and having been through it, I can tell you it's an extraordinary experience. And then, you know, initially we were looking to raise money last year in the more conventional way. And I'm really glad we did it. I'm so energized and excited by the project we're building. And I should say, you know, the key part of that is the founders of Dover Vivo, which are two guys, a guy called Valerio and William, both Italian, another William, which is very unusual. William is not really an Italian name, but the doctor that helped with the birth was called William, and so they named him William. But that's I digress. But they are very they're a bit older than us, but we had some really good chemistry with them and still do, and we shared their vision. And you know, I spoke earlier about, you know, as an entrepreneur wanting to have that excitement. I don't think I lost it, but I certainly feel re-energized with this process of wow, like we are part of this team. And the idea that, you know, that I don't have to go out every year just to raise another round and do the roadshow, and actually I can get stuck into just focusing on running the business and know that we have this larger group behind us, backing us, is really exciting. So I guess that answers, you know, why that was relevant for us. I think in terms of M&A elsewhere, well, just to flag in case anyone out there is looking to sell their business, we're looking to acquire. It's one of the ways we did the merger in the first place, to consolidate the European market. We already are acquiring some small portfolios, and we're speaking to others at the moment. And we hope that they will get as excited as I have and the other founders about joining this bigger team and creating something quite unique and at a serious scale. You know, we hope, and I believe we will now, create one of the most well-known brands in our industry over the coming years. I think I haven't, you know, having spent the last 2 years looking quite internally and now looking out and speaking to a lot of people in the market, but I'm only at the start of that phase. It's hard for me to say specifically where we will see the M&A, but obviously I was in touch with Pierre and with the Transparent deal, and that's fantastic. And I agree with the principle. I think we'll see more of that this year, and hopefully we'll be involved.
Awesome. But your role, of course, as a CEO will change a lot, right? I know my current role, and big part of the time is raising money, investor talks, and our acquisition talks. It's a constant process, and now, of course, this chapter is done, right? Your business is merged or acquired. So now, what is your new role? You discuss with them. You're gonna do focusing and more on the company growth, or and more strategically, or
yeah. So I remain CEO of Altido, and I'm on the board of Altido with Davide and then three from the Dover Vivo side, and we have our budget and our business plan for this year, and we have funding. And so I would say the main way my role has changed, I've run a business for 7 years without external capital, which over the pandemic obviously is really challenging. Before that,
lucky you.
Yeah. and we're now, you know, we're now back to profitability again, but we have money to spend, which is a really novel experience for me, and an exciting one, and a new challenge. It's strategic, as you say. It's working out, well, where's this money best spent, and how do we ensure we get the best return? It's about people management. We're hiring lots of new team members and making sure we get the best out of them. We had our first ever in-person sales meeting in Milan last week, where we got all the sales team and all the general managers together. We've never done that before. I mean, COVID obviously made that difficult, but that was, again, just a really energizing experience to have everyone face to face, lots of people I've never met before. So, I would say the role has changed, but in a really exciting and positive way. I feel challenged in all the right ways, whereas in the pandemic, I felt challenged in all the wrong ways. You were just firefighting and dealing with the next major crisis.
It's fun though. It's good. All right. Last segment that we do with guests is rapid fire. So one word answers, give us first thing that comes to mind.
I'm ready.
Beer or cocktail?
Beer.
Night in or night out?
Night out.
Ski or beach?
Going skiing next week, so it's got to be ski.
When you are worth hundreds of millions, will you buy a yacht or a plane?
Yacht.
Okay. Live anywhere besides London. Where would you go?
Siena.
Where? Siena?
Siena. It's in Italy. Yeah. Quite niche, but there's an amazing horse race there, which I'm a big fan of.
Yeah.
Nice square, amazing place.
Hmm.
Ross?
IPO or exit?
IPO.
Okay. UK or Italy?
My Italian girlfriend's in the room. Italy.
Is she from Pizza Siena?
No, she's not, but she might be one day.
Okay. Pizza or pasta?
Pasta.
Okay. Fish and chips or pasta?
Pasta.
Okay.
I have none. So I'm going to go to whose brand is it anyways? We'll let you, the Michaels, run that show of the rapid fire. They take all the good questions. So favorite segment, as Michael Golden mentioned to you offline, there's about 5 brands. I own about 120 brands underneath, and we like to guess what brand this belongs to. And so a fun little episode of whose brand is it anyways? And the hotel or the brand name is Zalara. Zalara.
You have a picture of it, Will?
I do not, because the logo is too easy to recognize.
Best Western?
No. I mean,
Zalara. No. Okay. Perry, no cheating.
Yeah, so Z-I-L-A-R-A.
Well, she wasn't, your girlfriend was in the room, right? So she could Google it quickly.
She could. She's actually gone now. I mean, I'm the wrong person to ask this. I'm going to say Accor.
Can we do a 50-50, Will?
A 50-50? What's a 50-50?
Come on. You don't know. Is it Wicked Millionaires? This program, you can do a 50-50. You can have an extra line. You can just cross a few. No?
No, Ross. Take a guess. Oh, man.
Well, I said Best Western, but it seems to be incorrect.
Come on, Golden.
Marriott.
So, unfortunately, all of you are wrong. It's Hyatt, but the only reason why...
Oh, yeah, that's also the top 5. I forgot about that. Yeah. The top 5.
But I pulled them up because that's the property they stayed at this weekend. So,
wow.
Solid. All included.
Seems to be sponsored, this one, Will. I don't know.
Yeah. Really, they paid me a ton of money, a.k.a. I paid them a ton of money.
One for point for Slickers.
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah.
Awesome.
Whatever.
Well, Perry, thank you for joining us. I look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you, guys. I'm sorry I waffled on so much.
No, don't be sorry.
Hopefully, some interesting bits for you guys and the listeners. But thank you guys for having me.
Of course. We appreciate your time. And we'll see you guys all again next week. Hey, Manuel, what are you doing in this episode? Did I forget a meeting?
Hey, Will. No, we don't have a meeting, but I love tuning into the recording, so I figured I'd hop in.
Oh, awesome. Well, hey, since I got you here, do you mind sharing some stuff about Jetstream? Ever since our episode on Slick Talk, we get tons of questions about you and, of course, Jetstream.
Of course. I'd love to share. Anything specific?
Well, I keep getting asked, what's the difference between Jetstream and any other service or tech in the vacation rental industry? My simple answer is that Jetstream isn't just the tech you need, but it's the people too. Am I close?
The short answer is yes. You see, maybe you're a short-term rental operator or a realtor or an investor. If you have an interest in short-term rentals and hospitality, you're looking for the most efficient way to either enter the industry or streamline your operations. You've got two options. Option one, the hard one. You find a PMS, hire staff, learn the tools, figure out OTA distribution, train yourself, train your teams, price your product, deal with customers, and you do everything yourself. Option two, partner with Jetstream. Jetstream is a complete solution that maximizes your revenue in the short-term rental industry without increasing your fixed costs. Jetstream handles everything.
So I don't need to sign up for vacation rental software or worry about distribution headaches. And what about branding? What if operators love their brand and name? Do they have to give that up in order to be powered by Jetstream?
Absolutely not. Jetstream does all of this white labeled under your brand name. Everything. You focus on delivering on-site guest delight and growing your inventory, Jetstream handles the rest. And to make it even easier for your listeners and anyone else who stumbles across this podcast, anyone who mentions code SLICKTALK50 will receive 50% off the first 3 months.
All right, coming in big with the 50% off for our listeners. Well, hey, Emmanuel, I just want to say thank you so much for shedding some light on the power of Jetstream and being such a great industry partner. I do have to get back to this episode, though, but let's get together soon for another virtual happy hour. First round's on me.
Sounds good, Will. See you soon.